Welcome to Waiting For You, the podcast where we talk infertility, hope, loss and courage. I'm Janine, mum of one, a newborn and family photographer and lover of dark chocolate. Here we will share stories of families who have faced a different or difficult journey through conception, pregnancy or postpartum. I want to honour these stories and have them be heard, and I want to bring it all, the tears, the hope, the despair and the joy. Welcome back to Waiting For You. In today's episode, I'm chatting with Felicity. Felicity shares her story of coming to have her three children. It is a story of infertility, IVF, miscarriages, DNCs, embryo testing, egg donation, and the sad death of her young sister. It is a lot, and I'm so grateful to Felicity for sharing. Here's Felicity's story. Hey, Felicity, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, Janine. Thank you very much for having me. I love your podcast, and it's something so close to my heart that I'm so passionate about. So I really enjoy sharing our journey to help maybe help other people and to raise awareness.
Oh, amazing. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do too. So this is perfect.
Great.
And thanks for reaching out for me to share your story. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Do you want to start by telling me a little bit about you and your family?
Yes. So we live in Ashburton, which is a nice small little town, so easy to get around and a nice place to raise children. I live with my husband, Jared. We've been married for 9 years and together for 12. Mm-hmm. He is the best father and husband, and I honestly couldn't do this parenting journey without him. Mm-hmm. He absolutely is so hands-on and does everything and helps so much. And, yeah, he's so pivotal. And we have our three miracle children. I mean, I think all children are, even just naturally conceived, because it's so amazing. Yeah, such an amazing thing. And there's really actually like a lot that has to come together for it to work in a small window of time. So they're all miracles, but ours are very much so. So we have our daughter Lorelei, who's 5, and she's just started school this year. She's beautiful. Our son Joshua, who's 2, and he is at preschool. And we've got our baby son Noah, who's 7 months old.
Oh, gorgeous. And you're going to share the story of how you came to have those gorgeous children. But before we do that, can you share with me what you love doing as a family with all those beautiful babies?
Yeah, well, it's sometimes tricky because to please one, you're not always pleasing the others, I think, just because of the different ages and stages that they're at. But we just love doing fun children kid things with them because you kind of like become a second child yourself in a way having children, and you really enjoy like just doing playgrounds and chipmunks swimming and things with them. Anything that we know they will enjoy, we will enjoy, because you just see the delight on their faces. Noah obviously has to just come along for the ride, and but he is pretty crazy and we just do our best with him. And and we love hanging out with extended family as well. Mm-hmm. And we love going up to my parents' batch, which is in Picton. And we don't do it that much at the moment because it's such a mission with all of them. But it's something nice that we do as a family. And Jared's family's from Blenheim, so you get to combine both sides of the family as well. At least I wouldn't necessarily call it a holiday at this point in my life, but it's a change of scenery.
Cool. Okay. So today you're going to share your story, like I said, of coming to have your children, and it's a fertility story. So do you want to start by telling me, how did you kind of know that you were facing fertility issues?
Yes, well, nobody knows, or no one thinks that they will be the ones, you know. You kind of think it's quite rare, but it actually isn't. And you just think, oh, I'm fine, there won't be any problems. I didn't meet my husband until I was 30. And mm-hmm. then we were engaged at 32, married when I was 33. Then we mm-hmm. bought a house and,
you know, did all the things.
You know, yeah, you do all the things. And in hindsight, like if I had known, but you don't, I mean, I wouldn't. I would say the most important thing is having children, and the other things can be done at other times, but it's not how society sort of tells you to do it or expect what you think. So, but anyway, so we tried naturally for 8 months and like really actively and, you know, just sort of like counting days and and you become really aware of your body and, you know, your cycles and just everything. And then after that time, nothing had happened. Even sometimes I almost thought I was pregnant and we'd do a test and that. So I thought, right, okay, well, I'm 34, getting closer to 35. I'm not mucking around. So I made an appointment right after my 35th. birthday to see a fertility specialist in Christchurch. Initially they sort of didn't seem very concerned and almost were looking at us like, oh, you're not that old, and it was kind of a weird response. But they just did all the initial blood work and things, and I think she may have done a vaginal exam, but I don't think you can tell much from that. And the only real thing that came up from the blood test was low ovarian reserve, so the AMH level wasn't great for my age. But I didn't really know what that meant or, what kind of consequences that could have. So then we tried clomiphene, and we tried a couple of rounds of that and nothing. And that actually, incidentally, is what my mother used to conceive me.
Really?
It's funny. It's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
She had that to get me after having some losses and some problems before me. But then she had my two sisters after me without anything. So.
Okay.
But of course, you know, she was in her like mid-20s as opposed to mid-30s. So, right. So I said, oh, well, I will not have endometriosis. I was sure that I wouldn't. I thought my cycles have never been irregular, that I didn't think the bleeding was excessive. I hadn't had pain. And I just thought, and she said that our IVF doctor said you could still have it. And I didn't believe her. And I thought, no, she doesn't know. And so, but she said, well, the only way to know for sure is to do a laparoscopy. So even though I didn't opt for that at the very, very start, we did it in February of 2015. So we started seeing her in August 2014. So too far. But that was, I wish I'd done it sooner, because it did reveal that I actually had, you know, moderate to severe endo in quite a lot of places throughout.
Gosh. It's the weirdest thing, right?
Yes.
It caused me so much pain and suffering. And then you can have it quite, you know, moderate to severe and have no symptoms at all.
Yeah. Well, when I look back on things, I definitely think I had symptoms. Oh. Not necessarily the pain, but a whole lot of other things that when you read about, you know, you realise. But and also, I think being on the pill for a lot of years probably controlled it. Quite a bit. I just remember having one really painful period when I was 14, and that was about it in terms of pain. I wonder if that was when a lot of it kind of stuck to all the places and then it just built on top of that. But I don't really know a huge amount about it. So anyway, she removed as much as she could during that operation, and there was some on the bowel and bladder which she couldn't remove because you can end up with a colostomy bag. It gets better with pregnancy. So after the operation, I felt terrible and I was so bloated that I looked pregnant. I had to wear my husband's clothes for the week after that.
Yeah.
And then when I went back to work, I said to work I'd only need a week, even though they said I'd probably need two, and I wish I hadn't done that. But I didn't realise what it would be like. But anyway, so people, I even had customers asking if I was pregnant, which was horrible because, you know, it felt like we were so far from being pregnant. But
yeah, that's right.
Anyway, I think I just said I'd had an operation or something. And her advice right after she saw me after the surgery when I woke up from the anaesthetic was to do IVF and not to muck around, to do it ASAP. So also the fact that she'd removed a lot could have, you know, help with it if you did it sooner. And I think she kind of like scratched linings and stuff, which can help with implantation things.
Great. That. And so were you eligible for some public funding for that?
Well, probably would have been eventually, but there's such a wait for and I was very conscious of my age, and I just had this feeling that I just did not want to muck around. So we were fortunate enough to be able to get some financial help from my family.
Amazing.
I had actually lost my little sister to cancer a few months before we started to try to have
her. Oh, I'm sorry.
So that probably changed our whole perspective on the whole thing as well. And in some ways it helped so much, and in other ways it probably didn't. So it was really complicated. But so she had left some money just like to our whole family, kind of, well, to mum and dad, but said that she wanted it to be for my sister and I as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was amazing. And otherwise, I don't know what we would have done, but I am so, so glad that we didn't try and wait for funding. Because I think we would have lost our chance. Like, I think we just got in time, really, given the journey.
And what a beautiful gift from your sister.
I know. And she inspired me the whole way through. She kept me going. So it was, I think I was like still in a lot of grief and shock and trauma. She died so young at 29 and so quickly. She had, not long over a month from that diagnosis to death.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and she lived in London, so we all had to just pick up and go over there. Leave everything and just go there at the drop of a hat, because it went from them not knowing what was wrong with her but thinking it was some kind of cancer to suddenly, like, you might not even make it, come now, kind of thing. So, and so then we spent time with her in the Royal Marsden Hospital in London, and then we found her a beautiful hospice, because that was all that could be done. And she really wanted to come back to New Zealand, but she was too ill and we couldn't make that happen for her. So while we were over there, it was quite surreal. And we were being strong for her as much as we could. And she was also trying to be so, so brave and strong, which she was. So I think it probably didn't hit the horror and everything about it didn't really hit until after her funeral when we were back in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and then it wasn't long before then we started trying. I think it would have affected like my stress levels and just probably my body and just everything. But again, like, I mean, she would have wanted us to, and I'm glad that we didn't wait. But it was sort of like, it helped so much in some ways, and it probably was really hard in another way.
Yeah, that's right. It's very complicated, isn't it? Grief.
And also, you know, it would have affected obviously the rest of my family so, so much, especially my parents. So the way that they could be there for me was different, and
Of course,
it changed. It changed the way I was almost allowed to feel about the journey, as in, I was still lucky, so lucky and grateful, and I was, to be alive, because you felt so guilty being over there with her when you felt well, you know. It was, it was just a horrible, you felt guilty, and I felt so guilty because she was my youngest sister, so she was 5 years younger than me, and I was just like, why isn't it me? And like, there's a lot of feelings and emotions that go through your mind, and you're so helpless, you can't help, you know. So that was definitely a big part of our whole journey.
Of your journey, So are you ready to go on and talk about your IVF cycles?
Yeah.
I don't want to rush you away from your beautiful. What was your sister's name? Tell me her name.
Her name was Lucy. So our daughter is Lorelei Lucy.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
And we always knew we didn't want it to be her first name because you cannot replace a person. But we so wanted it to be her middle name.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. And she knows all about that, and it's it's really special. Also wanted, loved how her name Lorelei also started with L, because it felt like another sort of tribute to Lucy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a really, really beautiful way to do it.
So, we did our first cycle, I think it was around March of 2015, and we got five embryos that made it to day five. And I think we just we didn't really know much about any of it, but obviously, like, that's quite low numbers. But we still had quite a lot of hope. So, you know, they just really don't tell you a lot, and then you just go for the day to have it transferred. And then at that point they said, right, we've got a beautiful looking one, we'll put it in. And I was like, what about the other four? Thinking, you know, and they were like, they're probably just not going to be suitable for freezing or using. So just that one. So you can't really believe it, but you just hope and pray that only one will make it. Yeah. And it didn't. Okay. It just didn't, implant. So, so then you're kind of just right back at square one. And, it is hard, especially one of Jared's aunties had an IVF journey. She had had her first child naturally, and then a few years later tried to have more. And she'd done IVF and got twins, like, the first time. So, like, I think people think it's such a silver bullet, and once you've been through it, you realize it is far from that. It is, they can only work with what you've got, and there is a lot of science involved, but there's a lot of chance and unknown involved.
Agreed.
So, but anyway, you know, I was definitely not ready to give up, and I just was like, when can we try again? You know, that was how I kind of dealt really with our whole journey, probably, which, my husband wasn't the same as that. He found it hard and wanted to kind of grieve, stages and losses.
Each stage.
And sort of almost, he would have probably almost wanted a bit of a breather in between things, but I was very much right, what's next? Because that was my only sort of, that really helped me to cope.
Because when you're doing, I don't know if this is true for you, but when you're doing treatment, you're actively doing something, right? You feel like you've got a little bit of, maybe a little bit of control, or at least there's action happening rather than nothing happening.
I would agree with that 100%. But some people, you know, that is not how, like, they just can't, they need to break, give themselves breaks and things. And I mean, it's just how I felt, but I can understand both sides. And I think I definitely, like, pushed my body and my mental health and everything. Like, I wouldn't say I was looking after myself, but I was, I was just, very determined that I was not giving up. So then we did our second round, and again we got five embryos, and this time they let us transfer two. One of them that they transferred, they thought, I think, was starting to slow down, so I think they just sort of give it their best shot. But I mean, we didn't think we'd get twins, and I do not think they thought we would either. Like,
yeah.
By that point, I was starting to think, okay, this is really not a simple thing, and it's not guaranteed. And I don't know if I was already losing faith and hope, but kind of in a way, like you start to realise exactly how hard it actually is.
Yeah.
So then I got pregnant from one of those, whichever one.
Oh, you did? Was.
Yes, and like it did feel amazing, but you're so scared as well. But you're also excited, and you know, you feel okay. This is our time, and you know, and of course, you know, you have to tell like work and immediate family and things, and you just sort of each day you're kind of holding your breath. And I was praying, praying a lot that it would be okay. And I was thinking, oh, I haven't got morning sickness, or I hope that's okay. And when they tell you that you're pregnant, the nurse always says that, you know, there's a 25% at least chance of miscarriage. So, you know, this is a good step, but just, you know, keep calm and don't get too carried away. And I did not feel secure.
Yeah.
So then we went for our 7-week scan, and there was no heartbeat, and it is a really hard thing, as everyone knows, and it was a missed miscarriage, which I had never heard of. So your body doesn't recognise that the baby's no longer growing, so you don't bleed, you have no idea. So then they said that they said 80% or 90% of women recommended doing a medically managed miscarriage, where they take you to hospital and you have some drugs, and it helps the body sort of not give birth, but in a way get the baby out. So since they said that, many people thought it was less invasive and the best. I thought, okay, well, I'll do that then. So we did that, and it didn't work. And it just made me bleed really heavily, but it was not working at all. And so I ended up staying overnight and having multiple doses of the drug to see, but it wasn't. So the next morning I just rang our fertility doctor, and she organised for us to get a D&C, which luckily we could do through health insurance, which was amazing because, you know, obviously it's very expensive. And we just wanted that done so that we could then try again, because we didn't know how long, because it can take a long time for the body to kind of click.
Pregnancy is no longer.
And you can end up with an infection or, there's lots of things, and it just wasn't something I was wanting. So we did that, and that was pretty straightforward. And, you know, I didn't feel anywhere near as bad as I did after the laparoscopy. So we've had so many steps in our journey that it's almost hard to kind of,
Before we go to the next one, like, how was your head and your heart at this point? Because finally becoming pregnant after all that time, and then not being, that's got to be so tough.
Yeah, I think it really scares you, I think, because you just think you can come so far and you can still...
Mm.
Yeah, I think it probably, it put quite a lot of fear in me that could just continue to happen and always happen. And
that's right.
Because you don't know exactly the reasons why things are going wrong, like why are you miscarrying or why can't you get pregnant? Like, you don't know if it's carrying the baby or if it's the embryo or what it is really. And they don't know. And you're definitely grieving. But again, I was so pulled between trying to be grateful for my life because of my sister and not make a big deal about this, because it was nothing compared to what she'd been through, which, you know, I totally agreed with. But it made it hard because you were always suppressing your feelings.
And you were still hurting. You were hurting.
I know. Yeah. So I think that was very hard, because I almost had to sort of stop myself from feeling too upset about it. Like I didn't have the right to, which, probably isn't healthy and good to do that. Mm. But it was how like the people around me were sort of almost telling me to feel, and how I sort of felt myself, like I felt guilty for being upset about this. So it was a tricky situation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tricky. So you, I'll just help jog your memory because I made some notes. So you told me from that cycle, you did have two frozen.
So we had two frozen from that cycle. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. So that was amazing. Like, to have those two frozen was so good because one of them was frozen straight after they transferred, the one that got me pregnant, and the other one was like the day after. Okay. And I remember the nurse ringing with that second one and saying, yes, we've been able to freeze that one. And I was so happy about that. So, yeah, two in the freezer. We were like, okay, well, maybe those are going to be our two kids. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't really believe that they necessarily would be. And I think I just already felt that the whole process was so hard that it was probably unlikely, like, given that we'd had five each time and how little you end up with from that. I think I just thought I need to do another round of IVF before I even use those ones, which I think is quite unusual. People wouldn't normally do that. They'd normally try their frozen first.
Yeah.
They wouldn't probably be thinking the way I was thinking, but I just thought, I'm 35. Like, I literally felt like I should make hay while the sun shone. I honestly did. And so we were talking to our fertility doctor, and because they had said that from 36, a woman's fertility declines quite rapidly. I was so conscious of that. She said that there was a new type of testing, or a testing that hadn't been able to be done in Christchurch but was going to be now done in labs in Christchurch, called PGS testing. So that's where they biopsy embryos and then count the number of chromosomes on the embryo to determine whether it's normal or not. So most people at that point were using it just to screen out genetic disorders like cystic fibrosis or things that they knew that they either carried or their family carried that they didn't want to pass on to children. That was the main reason people were doing it, not because of miscarriage and thinking that they had a large number of abnormal embryos.
Right.
So she said, well, the advantage of doing a third round would be that you could get the third round embryos tested along with your two frozens, and that would be hopefully a bigger amount of embryos, which would make it more worthwhile for them to do the testing, and they'd be more happy to do it if they had a few more than two to do that with. So it was almost like, you know, she said you couldn't just do the two that you had. So I thought that that was great because I felt like everything was so chancy. And I think I was already thinking, look, if mine aren't going to work, I don't just want to keep doing it. You know, I don't know. I'm probably unusual, but I think
all of these ways of thinking about it are valid. It's, you know, everybody's circumstance is different. So
I really I felt in the fertility appointments that you often got rushed out without almost knowing anything about it. And I asked as many questions as I could, and our doctor, Michelle, was amazing, and she actually liked that I asked questions and wanted to know. So that was great. But some of the other ones, if you had appointments with the other ones, they just wanted you out as quick as possible and didn't really want you to ask. But if I understood something, it helped me accept it. And I realized I didn't feel like it was my fault. But I also knew, like, that if something isn't possible, it's not possible. And so I just, hadn't given up, but I still, I liked this idea anyway of counting the chromosomes, because obviously the majority of miscarriages are caused by the wrong number of chromosomes.
Right.
Yeah, and it's completely normal. And obviously it's miscarriage and infertility is talked about a lot more now, but it wasn't. And miscarriage, like, once upon a time, just like to me would have seemed like such a terrible thing and such a rare thing, but it's not. And it's so nature's common way. It's, you know, it's designed because there's something wrong and that baby can't continue for whatever reason. So even though having the right number of chromosomes, they said it didn't increase the pregnancy chance, but it did decrease the miscarriage rate. That's kind of weird, isn't it? And like, so it didn't exactly make you feel, okay, this will definitely work, but I don't know. It seemed like something. It seemed like an advance that might help us.
Yeah. And yeah. Even if I just kind of feel like with you needing to know as a helpful step for you in the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had, with that round, we did it as soon as possible again, and we had to do ICSI, where they transfer and inject an individual sperm into each egg.
Yes.
Whereas the first two rounds had just been putting all the sperm with the eggs. And and it's like survival of the fittest, and the strongest sperm makes it. So I kind of didn't want that, but it was they said it was the best way for this, because it meant that when they were biopsying the embryo, there wouldn't be heaps of dead sperm stuck around the outside of the embryo. Made it better for the testing. So we had to do it. And I just felt like, I don't know why I didn't like that idea. But anyhow, we had to do it. So that is what happened. And for some, I think, I don't know, I was feeling a little bit more positive, maybe because of this new testing, and maybe because I had the other two, and I was trying to make more, because what I was essentially trying to do is to guarantee, not that you can, but I was trying to make sure that I could have more than one child if possible.
Like, I was giving you that a little collection.
Because I knew how easily it can go. They always said it's a numbers game, and you could clearly see right from the start how that worked.
Yeah, totally.
And why the people that get so many eggs like have a much better chance. And so we were never going to get heaps of eggs. So, that's what we did. And, it was my most painful egg collection out of the three, because they said that it was difficult for them to remove the eggs. And they said that could have been like an age thing and an egg quality issue, and I had to have double trigger injections. And, it was the sorest afterwards. So, like, that was – and that kind of – when they said that afterwards, I was like, oh, like, that's not – that doesn't make you feel good, like thinking that these things are already, it made you feel like they'd already got worse, like, which is horrible feeling. Like, but anyway, so then we had to wait, I think it was a couple of months for those results. And
right, so you tested the ones you got from that one plus the other two.
And then freeze them all again, like, because they instantly can unfreeze and freeze. So pretty quick. And they just biopsy a very small part out of the embryo, so it doesn't harm the embryo, or it generally does.
Amazing, eh? It's amazing to think they can biopsy an embryo. Tiny, tiny.
And not visible to the naked eye, and yet you can see why the testing would be so complicated and specialist and take so long and things. And they also said, well, you can also have some that come back inconclusive and that they don't know the result.
Right.
So our fertility doctor rang, and she said that it was a mixed result, and she said that the two from the second round had come back testing normal.
Okay.
That from that third round we got six embryos, but by the time it came to day five we had four. So from the four, three came back abnormal and one came back inconclusive.
Okay.
Which, in my mind, the inconclusive one might as well have been abnormal. That's how I felt. I was kind of negative and skeptical, and, you know, that's how I just thought. So I was like, well, what a waste, because, of course, that round it cost even more money. Plus, we'd already had those other two, and we delayed everything by doing this third round. But, I mean, well, we still had those other two. So then as soon as we could, we had the first normal one from that second round transferred, and it did not work. And I was so, like, just sort of despondent and, like, giving up. By that point, I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. Like, this was normal and it's not even working. Like, I was like, there must be so many other factors that they can't tell. And, you know, I felt like it was kind of hopeless, like, well, at least hopeless with mine, I felt, my eggs. Because, you know, Jared's sperm test had been fine and, I mean, just normal. So I just felt that it was because my eggs, and I didn't feel like it was a failure, but I just thought, well, if it can't be, it can't be. But anyway, we still had that last one, but I was feeling, I kind of felt it wouldn't work as well. Like, I pretty much felt that it wouldn't. So, yeah, I was definitely quite negative at that point.
Right, yeah.
And anyway, so our doctor was kind of surprised as well, and so she did a whole raft of other blood tests and tests because she wanted to see if she'd missed something or if there was something very strange, like some sort of congenital thing, or a case where like my genetics and my husband's genetics didn't go well together, or you know, there's all sorts of rare things, but nothing came back from the test. And she also threw in some that she'd done right at the start when we'd seen her. The only thing that came back that caused her any concern was my thyroid levels were really high.
Oh.
Yeah. So she said that I couldn't have that one transferred. I couldn't do any more treatment. We needed to see an endocrinologist straight away to see what was going on with my thyroid. So
another pause.
Yeah, that was such a blow to me. Like,
I
remember walking out of that appointment with her and just crying, and I happened to see somebody I knew at the reception desk who was going for her egg collection, and I knew she was. And I just, like, said hi to her and was kind of crying, and then I just walked out, and she was probably like, oh, my God, like, wondering what had happened.
Yeah.
But she was obviously going for something exciting, like her first egg collection. So anyway, we saw the endocrinologist and we had, a test. I had a test at Christchurch Hospital, a scan thingy on my neck and thyroid and things. And then we went back and saw her, and she diagnosed me with Graves' disease. That is an autoimmune condition, to be honest, I don't know that much about, because it hasn't actually turned into a problem at this point.
Great.
Yeah. So she said that, but I have a lot of different autoimmune conditions in my family. So she said that it could have been brought on a bit earlier also by the stress of everything that had been happening with us, like with Lucy and the fertility treatment. And she said it wasn't at a stage where it needed thyroid medication, so her advice was to just try, you know, to keep trying to get our baby. But I think that, well, what she thought, and I think what our fertility doctor said as well, is quickly stop taking the Elevate, that, you know, I'd been on that for so long, like a few years by then, because we'd been thinking that that gave the best start, you know how they tell you. But the high levels of iodine in that actually really can affect your thyroid. And so as soon as I stopped taking that, and then, like, you know, it wasn't, and after we'd seen her and everything, by the time that last embryo was transferred, my levels were within a normal range again. So that was great news. Like, that felt really good to know that when that embryo was transferred. And nothing, I didn't have to take any medication, and I was just, like, happy. Like, to me, like, I wasn't worried about having some strange thyroid condition, because obviously I was still thinking, well, my sister, what happened to my sister? So I was like, I was just thinking, well, that's nothing, except that if it stops me having a baby, kind of, like, I didn't mind if I had to take thyroid medication my whole life. That just seemed like nothing. But it was the fact that it could delay and stop this is that worried me.
That's right.
So then we had that dreaded 2-week wait, which everybody down IVF knows, and it is so long. It's such a long.
God. It's torture. It's absolute torture.
It is. And I was already, like, right from the start, so, like, consumed by having a baby that it was all I thought about.
Yeah, that's right. By this stage, you're, like, desperate, right?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And even at the start, even when I wasn't entirely thinking about it, it's always in the back of what was always in the back of my mind. Like, the people that can compartmentalize and not do that are so amazing, but I'm not like that. I was just so obsessed. So but anyway, from all the different things that we'd been through, after a few days, I said to my husband, it hasn't worked again. I'm sure I can tell. And I told my parents it hasn't, because I just wanted to prepare them as well for another disappointment, my husband and my parents and my family. I was very sure. And we just moved to a new house. And so we were like tidying up the old one to, you know, because people had bought it. And
yeah.
I wanted it to be beautiful for the people that we'd sold it to. So I thought, right, it hasn't worked. I'm going to go around there, get on the ladder and do a bit more cleaning for them and things.
Right,
so
right.
I just thought, well, there's no harm. Also, I mean, they tell you that once it's transferred, there's nothing you can do that will stop or make it happen. And I believed them. I didn't feel the need to wrap myself up. I just thought if it won't work, I just at that point thought it wouldn't work anyway.
So then
when it came to the Friday that the nurse was going to ring with the results, I did my blood test, you know, and waited. But I just wasn't expecting. So I wasn't sitting there thinking, when's that clinic going to ring like I had?
Right. You had already decided.
I just thought it hasn't worked. And then she eventually rang. It's late afternoon. And she was actually our favourite nurse that rang, the one that we'd chatted to so much and had really been such a support, like, which was so essential. Like, some of them, you know, didn't necessarily get to know you or have a personal connection or give you a lot of time, but this particular nurse, Sarah, she was amazing. So she rang and she sort of she just said, hi, it's Sarah from the clinic. And she didn't sound like wildly excited. And I said, and you're ringing to tell me I'm not pregnant. And she said, you are pregnant. And to be honest, I actually didn't feel happy. I wished I wasn't, which sounds strange, but I just thought it's only going to end in another miscarriage. It'll be hope and then more disappointment. That's what I felt by that point, which it's, yeah, again, like, I don't know, it's self-protection mechanism. And some people may find it strange, but I didn't feel happy at that point, really. Like, I just thought something's going to happen. It's too good to be true. I just didn't. I told my husband and he was excited and he was like, you're fucking kidding me. Like, he just couldn't believe it. So I started to feel a little bit of hope and excitement, but I was still really like, oh, I just don't want to know, you know, I was worried. So
yeah, of course. It makes sense, right?
Yeah, I'm really trying to protect myself. So then, you know, you're just going along and you're just hoping and praying, but you're still really scared. Like, people that have just had normal pregnancies and no losses and things, they don't know. They just think you're pregnant and that's done and dusted, it's a done deal. But people that have had treatment and losses and things, they know it's nowhere near a done deal. Like, yeah, my husband and I always said that until we were holding that baby, like physically holding it in our arms, we would not. You know, we thought about stillbirth, we thought about everything that could go wrong.
And
we did not feel secure or guaranteed. Like, we almost hated telling people as we got further along because we still felt like something could still be taken from us. And we just didn't feel secure. And then at 16 weeks, I did have bleeding and I was sure that that was that. We went to Christchurch and I thought, we're having a miscarriage and this is that. After getting so far, I still thought it was entirely possible that that was over. And they did an ultrasound and they said, I think the baby's happier than you are at the moment. And they didn't see any reason for it and it stopped. And, you know, in hindsight, it probably wasn't a huge amount. It felt like a lot of bleeding, but I think it probably wasn't much, and because it stopped so quickly. But, yeah, it freaked us out and we thought that was over. Yeah, so then.
But it wasn't, right?
So then that became our daughter, Lorelei.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. How amazing.
And the rest of the pregnancy was absolutely fine. And
great.
And, we had a C-section with her because our obstetrician said that they thought it was a good idea for us given what we'd been through. And also, they said it was the least stressful on a baby, and that really sealed the deal for us. I mean, we didn't even know if we'd have a choice. We thought we'd just have to try a normal birth. But no, when they said that, we just thought, we're going to do that. And so that meant that you also get to have the baby out at 39 weeks, a little bit sooner, which we also felt like we were worried about the risk of stillbirth. And I mean, only just because it's a possibility, it's not even a huge possibility and there wasn't a reason, but I think because they don't know why stillbirth occurs, I was worried that that could happen. So anyway, we got our beautiful girl and it was I mean, really, it was pretty much the happiest day of my life and probably our lives. It was so blissful, and she just held my hand, and like these photos like right after with her in my arms and holding my hand, and I looked so happy and relaxed and blissful, and she was just a dream baby. Like, she was easy and slept all night from 5 weeks old. And
I love that, because, you know, after you've been through all that, having a dream baby is really like
yeah. Well, there were some difficulties, as in she didn't want to breastfeed, she couldn't latch properly because of my nipples not being prominent enough, they're sort of flat. So I ended up pumping for her for 6 weeks and things, but eventually I did get her on, and I'm glad I persevered with the pumping, and, you know, I'm still happy that all that happened. And then another thing that happened, which was unusual and like just typical of things to happen to us, was that I had placenta retained product after her birth. Yeah. So about 9 days after I was home with her from the hospital, I started to get really heavy bleeding and stuff, and like livery clots. And I was like, I didn't know what was happening. And I had a midwife, and she was quite inexperienced, and she was like, it'll just be your period, honey. And I thought,
no,
it doesn't seem right. So that was, that turned into a bit of a horrible, like, you know, ambulance trip, and them not knowing what was wrong, and them just giving me antibiotics and then sending me home. And then it wasn't until Lorelei was getting her hips scanned to make sure they were okay, because Jared had hip problems when he was a baby, that I was chatting to the sonographer and said I still had some faint bleeding all this time later, when she was like, I don't know, 8 weeks or something. And she said, that's unusual. She goes, do you want me to just do an informal scan of you? And I said, yes, please. And so she said, yeah, I can see you've still got a blood supply to a small piece of placenta inside of you.
Wow.
So it was still like my body was confused, like I'm breastfeeding, but I also feel like I'm still pregnant. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had to have another D&T to remove that piece of placenta. Yeah. But I had to wait until that could be done, and that took a few more weeks. And, you know, I was lucky that I didn't get another infection or anything went wrong. They said it was quite manky by the time they did get it out. So that was just something unusual, because normally when you have a C-section, there's not anything left inside, because
they can sort of check while they're there. That makes sense.
That was just another thing that happened. But to be honest, again, I was like, well, it's only me, like my baby's fine, and that's what I care about. I was like, I'll be right. But if she's fine, and she was, then I didn't really worry me too much. You know, I was still so happy that she was healthy and happy and here with us. So it was just like a little bit of a blip and things, really. But
And so let's skip forward a bit, because we know you went on to have two more children. So was there more IVF involved for you for this?
Yes.
Yeah,
there was.
Because you had no embryos left after your daughter was born.
Yes, no.
That were normal, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what they tell you with the abnormal ones is they say, do you want them returned to you, so that you, because some people like to have them, and some people have cultural significance and they like to keep them or bury them or lots of things. Yeah, but we just said that they could be used for training purposes, because we didn't mind not having them, and we thought if it will help other people at some point, then that's what. So, but there was, this is the thing. There's so many steps in this journey that I've already left out a tiny part. When we'd had that result back about the testing and the third round being such a failure as such, I didn't think maybe we'd had that first normal one transfer and it hadn't worked. I actually thought, right, I'm going to need an egg donor. And I went to a second cousin of mine who had five children of her own. And I basically begged her to be our egg donor. I said to her that we did have one left, but I wasn't thinking it would work. And I just, I was crying and asking her if she could do it. And I could tell that she wasn't like saying yes, but she said she would talk to her husband and she would think about it. I just thought, she's got five children. I bet she like would be the perfect egg donor. And she's my second cousin. And I just thought, like, there's some connection to me there. And I just, so I was just hoping that she'd say yes, but I didn't really think so. And she thought about it for a few weeks and then she rang and said that they couldn't do it. And I think it was partly at least to do with their religious beliefs and things. Mm-hmm. And I did understand, but it did hurt. But
yeah,
no, that was all I could do. And then when, and this is another thing, this is me always wanting to be a step or two steps ahead to protect myself and to think, okay, not all hope is lost. So when Lorelei's embryo was inside of me and I felt like it hadn't worked a couple of days in and I was sure it hadn't, and I'd been right at the time, so I was so sure, I said to my husband, can I ask more people to be egg donors? And he was like, yes, you can. By that point, he had almost got his head around using an egg donor. He didn't like the thought, but he was getting closer to it. Because I think, like, I'm probably quite persuasive, but also I think he was realizing, like, that it just, how hard it was, and that it could be easily possible that it just wouldn't work with mine. And he wanted it to be with mine so much, but he also wanted the child so much too. Like,
right. Yeah. So he had come around,
to the idea, and I was already on board with the idea because I was just like, you've got to keep reevaluating your dreams. And if you, you know, I would have adopted. I would have almost done anything. Like, yeah. I was considering fostering, even though I knew that how hard that was and how you don't even get to keep them and, you know, all the different things. But I just knew that a pet was not going to be enough. Like, I needed to know that I'd done everything humanly possible to get my baby. So I asked another couple of second cousins via email whether they would consider being egg donors for us. And they were sisters, and I asked both of them. and I'm sure, like, it came as such a bolt out of the blue. One of them had two children of her own, two daughters, I think. And the other sister hadn't even started a family. She was married.
Oh, wow.
So she was probably like, what the hell? But
yeah.
I was like desperate, and I wanted, I wanted a baby so much, and I knew about time being short, and I just, it really helped me to have a next step. And my husband did not like the way I always did that. For him, he wanted to just try and grieve a little bit and not think about it and not talk about it. And I was always the next step. Step ahead. It just gave me hope and it kept me going, because I thought, okay, so if this doesn't work, then we can do this. And if this doesn't work, then we can do this.
You need a plan. You need a plan in front really of you.
Helped.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, like, if it would for everyone, but for me, it so helped. So I asked them. And then, of course, one of the sisters said she would, and she probably would have talked to her other sister who hadn't had the children and said, I will do it.
Yeah, right.
And then, of course, we found out that I was pregnant with Lorelei, but we didn't tell them yet because we thought we could well lose this baby anyway.
Right.
So we just sort of kept the fact that she said she'd offered and she would if we needed it. So we just kept that, you know, in the back burner, until, of course, we were much farther along, and then we told her that we were pregnant, and we were hoping that it would. But, you know, thank you so much for that amazing offer, and, you know, we were so grateful to her and her husband for being prepared to do that for us, because it's a huge thing and such a gift, and we were very grateful.
That is huge.
So then after Lorelei was born, we were conscious that if we were going to do more IVF, it had to be, you know, relatively quick.
Yeah.
So we went back and saw our doctor and got scored for the funding, because we knew that, you know, we'd need the funding if possible.
Yeah.
He was only a little baby, a few weeks old, when we went back and got scored. And, of course, with all the different things, we got points enough to go on the waiting list. And they said it would be about 12 months. And we thought, well, that's perfect. Also, they thought, like, that with what had happened, that I would easily, well, not easily, I guess they didn't say, but they just they felt that it was worth doing another round with mine. And they said my AMH hadn't gone terribly bad since then. And they just thought it was worth it. And so we just trusted that and thought, well, we can do another round. Like, what's a fourth round? Like, you know, it's worth it. We did. And we only got 3 embryos this time, so, you know, that's less. Right. And then there was only 2 by the time it came to transfer day, and I think, like, 1 wasn't looking that good. But so they put in 2 again.
Right.
Okay. But then we got pregnant. And, like, this time I definitely felt positive. I just felt that it probably, well, not probably definitely would, but I felt more positive than I had with Lorelei's embryo going in, that it, you know. And also, we also then had our 7-week scan, and it still looked good, and everything looked normal. The size looked good for its age, and the heart rate and everything. And we just, like, our doctor was like, she seemed to think it was done and dusted. We felt good, but, you know, obviously we still never get ahead of ourselves. But
yeah.
We felt good. We went on a holiday for a different cousin's wedding in Australia, and we just thought everything was fine. But she'd arranged for us to have another scan with her at around 9 or 10 weeks, because she knew that it would just put our minds at ease. It's not normally what they do, but she just thought, have another one and just see how things are progressing. And we went for our, like, 9.5-week scan with her, and then there was no heartbeat.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, like, we couldn't really believe it, and I think she was surprised. And, like, you can tell as soon as they insert the thing inside of you, and that you look at their face and you look at the screen and you're looking for that flickering heartbeat, and you can tell so quick. And then you see her searching around, like, with the thing, like, trying to find something. And your heart just falls, but you know, and you just also have to just hold it together, like, you know,
yeah.
And they don't want to tell you, but they have to tell you. And yeah, and so, like, it was another missed miscarriage. So that's why, like, early pregnancy is so scary for us, because I never, you know, I always have the missed ones. So you're sitting there and you have no idea. You just hope it's still okay, but you don't know, because your body doesn't tell you. It doesn't bleed. It doesn't cramp. It just... It continues
on.
So you cannot tell. You've literally no way of telling, and that makes it even more scary. Like, so then we just we were like, right, well, we're going to have another DNC then, because we knew that was that. And so we wanted our doctor to do it, and she said she could, but not for a few more weeks. And so we just got it scheduled, and we got insurance to approve it and everything, and we were just sort of waiting and seeing. And then it actually, while we were waiting for this appointment to have it done, it started to happen naturally.
Okay.
It was horrible. And and I just, like, now I, like, really know, like, what it's like to have a natural miscarriage. It was so, so horrible, like, so painful and so much blood and so traumatic. And, I remember it starting when I was at a funeral, and then, like, having to take more and more painkillers and things, and then driving back from Christchurch, where the funeral was, and being at home with our little daughter, and Jared had rugby practice, and I remember, like, holding her and getting her ready for bed and giving her a bottle, and then, like, having, like, stuff, like, fall out of me and stuff while I was dealing with her, but just having to, like, put her to bed and pretend everything was fine so that she wasn't, you know, and then when he got home and things, and we rang, you know, thereafter, as in doctors and things, to try and figure out what to do. And they said, yeah, it's really hard to know if it's a complete miscarriage or not, but come in tomorrow for a scan and we'll check. So, yeah, so then it stopped. The bleeding seemed to stop, and I kind of, like, thought, well, maybe that was it. I mean, I had no idea, like, what. And then we went into Christchurch and we got scanned at our fertility clinic, and our doctor was like, no, I'm sorry, the whole baby and the whole sac is still completely intact, and your cervix is still completely closed. It hasn't opened at all. And I was like, oh, no. And so she was like, she ran Christchurch Women's, but they didn't have any appointments for DNCs that week either, and she still couldn't do it. So, like, it was still a matter of just waiting. Like, you couldn't do anything. And it was like, and I remember, like, seeing a nurse after seeing the doctor, and she could tell I was starting to get really so much pain. And she like was prescribing some stronger painkillers and just like, you know, telling us to keep them in the loop. And if I thought something was really bad, call an ambulance. But basically we were just told to go back to Ashburton because there was nothing that could be done.
Wow.
So like we were just like, oh God. And then, so we went, we thought, right, we'll get some lunch and we'll go back to Ashburton. And so we went to Merivale Mall and the pain just started to get really quickly, really, really bad. And I went to the bathroom and then I was just like, I was like, I can't even move. Like, I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. And eventually, and my husband was getting worried out in the mall, and eventually I managed to get out to him and I said, you've got to call an ambulance. And I said, it's just, it's so sore, I can't handle it and I don't know what's happening. I'm not sure if something bad is happening, you know, like I just didn't know. And so he was like, I'll just drive you, honey, I'll just drive you. I was like, no, call an ambulance. And I was sort of just writhing about on like some chairs, like in the middle of a mall, and all these like retail assistants were coming out and all these people were stopping and things. And I had blood like through my trousers and things, and like I said, I just told them I'm having a miscarriage, but oh, it was horrible. And then the ambulance officers were awful. They were so like, I couldn't really believe it, but they were very unsympathetic. And yeah, and they didn't, it was like they were dealing with someone who was like, they were picking up a drunk from, you know, in the middle of the night. It was really, they weren't, I couldn't really believe it, two men. And yeah, it was awful. They didn't want to give me anything for the pain because they thought I could still, the baby could still be alive. And they made Jared go to the car and get paperwork from our doctor to prove that it was a miscarriage and things.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, eventually we got to emergency, and I was just begging and begging for pain relief. I mean, I don't know if my pain threshold isn't very good or what, but I think it had gone from like in 20 minutes time from my cervix being closed to it obviously just boom
happening.
Like,
yeah.
And so maybe it was kind of along the lines of like not labor, but closer along to when that sort of feeling, I guess. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know, because again, I haven't been in labor because we've had C-sections. So anyway, I couldn't. I was asking and begging and begging and begging because they tried to give me gas in the ambulance once they had proof that the baby was no longer alive. But it wasn't helping at all. And so I had to have 3 doses of morphine, like 1 and it still wasn't working, 2 and the 3rd dose, and it finally took the pain away. And I was so happy then, and I was just like, okay. And and then they, you wait and wait and wait in emergency and you don't get seen and you don't get seen. But at least I wasn't in pain and, not, you know. Then my husband just had to work out how to get our car from the mall before it got towed. And
of course.
I know. And he didn't want to, like, leave me, but he also didn't want our car to get towed. And then they transferred me eventually, after still not seeing a doctor, to the acute gynecological ward, which I'd been in before when I had the Retain product with Lorelei, and it's an awful, awful place. It's so, like, dark and gross, and, like, the staff are so used to miscarriage and stuff like that that they're almost immune to it. Like, they don't seem very sympathetic either. So it's a hard place, and we just were put into a tiny little room and just told to wait to see a doctor, of course. And so by the time, like, we had seen a doctor, I had passed the baby myself.
Right.
And I went to the bathroom and I quickly, like, grabbed, like, a bowl thing that was there to catch what was coming out, because I thought I need them to see this, because I need to see if it's complete or if they think it's complete, because otherwise I'll need a DNC anyway. Yeah. So I was like, I'm just gonna, so then I rang the bell and they came, and again, like, it's amazing how just detached people can be when you've just passed another baby. Aww. But they just and then they did get a doctor to see it. I think we were seen by a doctor around 10:30 at night, and we'd been there since, I don't know, like, well, maybe lunchtime or something. It's a long time before you actually get seen by a doctor, but they were confident that that was complete. And I was still skeptical, but I thought, well, there's nothing I can do. I hope to goodness that it's all out and I'm not going to get infections or need a DNC further down the track. But you just got to trust, and they thought it was complete, and that was that. So that was horrible, and I was really, like, worried of having that happen. another time.
Yeah, that's right. Puts another layer of anxiety on the whole processing.
That round I was 39, whereas like my first round I was 35. So yeah, at that point I thought, right, I'm not trying again with mine because it's just not going to work, and I'm not going through those miscarriages and things again. So that was all I was going to do, four rounds with mine, and that was it. So that is when we did use another egg donor, and it actually wasn't my second cousin. It was my sister, who was, you know, my other sister. She had actually frozen her eggs, like, because my mum and I had told her to, because she was in between relationships, and because of everything that had happened with my sister Lucy passing and with our journey, we didn't want her to miss her chance, and we thought, do it. So she did. And then she had got pregnant naturally, unexpectedly, while we were pregnant with Lorelei, but she didn't tell us because it was getting closer to us having her, and she didn't want to steal our thunder, and she just she kept it to herself until after a few weeks after Lorelei was born, and then she told us. And I mean, I did cry because I was like, so you had that happen just by chance, by plan, and I've been through so much. But then I was very happy, like, very quickly afterwards, so happy for her, like, because I had also been, when I was pregnant with Lorelei, trying not to make too big a deal of it because I felt I was treading on eggshells for her and worrying about her, my other sister, and like, would she get children? And I wanted her to, and I didn't want to be all insensitive and rubbing it in her face and things. So, yeah, I was very, very happy that she was, and that our children were going to be so close. So she said to us at this point, well, I've got those eggs that I froze and I don't need them. And I was like, but you might want more than one, because by this point she had a little girl, and she used Lucy as the middle name for her little girl as well.
Oh, cute.
And so our wee daughters are 6 months apart, and they're very, very close friends, and it's special and like meant to be. And like, Lucy was looking down on us and making happen. So so she was sure that one was enough, and that she would be more than happy to give them to us.
Right.
So yeah, of course it's not that simple, and we had to do counselling, and she had to our doctor had to apply to the ethics committee, and there's a big process, but eventually we were able to use them. She had five, and it's not a huge amount, again, in the egg donor scheme of things, because of course, like, she wasn't super, super young either, and she had actually had an ovary removed previously because she had endometriomas rupturing, and they precautiously removed an ovary because of my other sister passing, and they were being extra. So there's so many things that all happened like to us in our mid-30s, like just suddenly, like, so sort of like a different type of endo from my other sister. So yeah, so then we used those eggs, and five fertilized normally, and we thought great, and we thought five seemed like a fine number because that's all we'd ever really had ourselves. Yeah. We still thought from that there'll surely be one. I thought if she conceived naturally, there's absolutely no way we won't get one from that. And we were really happy because we had a book about it to give to our child about egg donation and things, and we'd had counselling, and she had, and we were all completely fine with it and happy with it. And, you know, we just thought it was the closest to me as it possibly could be and the best thing ever. So then, like, I got a call, like, a few days later saying that there was only about two left from the five, they weren't even looking good. They were slowing down and they weren't looking good. And I couldn't really believe it, and I was gutted because from, like, five fertilised normally at the start, you've got so much hope. And then, I think the day later they rang because I was hoping that, you know, one or two would just, like, surprise them or, I don't know, something, but they said, no, there's nothing to transfer. And I couldn't believe it. And it was like, oh my goodness, like we've done so much to try and get a sibling, but it's not looking like it's kind of going to be possible. Yeah. But then I thought, well, there's still my second cousin who offered. Right. And then I thought, and of course, me being always one step ahead, I thought, and also, if that doesn't work, we could use a clinic donor. Like, you know, I just thought, always that. And I was like, maybe we'll just like sell the house. Or, you know, I was just thinking, always thinking ahead and thinking of ways in which to make it happen. So, yeah. And I was also starting to think maybe I should like put my name down for adoption, even though I knew like there's hardly any babies a year in New Zealand.
That's right.
Adoption. Yeah. I was thinking about fostering. I was just trying to think all of stuff that was just clutching at straws. And I was also feeling guilty because I had my daughter and like I was lucky to have my daughter, but I really still didn't feel complete kind of. I mean, I just really wanted it for her and for us. And
yeah, of course.
And so I wasn't ready to just say, okay, that's fine, we'll just have her. I was still wanting to keep trying. So after that, when there was no embryos to transfer, the clinic said that the good news was that we would get a second go at the second lot of funding. So that was great. It was a bit of a wait, but that was fine. And since the process to, you know, use my sister's eggs, it's quite a big process. And then it was over so quick with nothing, absolutely nothing. So we were so happy that we got that second shot. And that's when I approached my second cousin again and she agreed. And so that we got that underway because, of course, that's a big process as well. Yeah. So then we had, a waiting period like of quite a few months. And because also we were fitting it in around what suited my second cousin too with her own life, because she had a career and two children and things. So, so in that time, we probably were one of the most relaxed times that we'd had, because we had a plan, it was going to happen, and we just had this sort of like gap of waiting, but we weren't stressed. So my husband was like, I think we should just keep trying naturally just in case. And so we just did anyway, even though I was probably a little bit scared of miscarriage, but we did. And we actually got naturally pregnant for the first time ever.
Wow.
I know. And it was so amazing. It was actually the first time I actually had a positive pregnancy test, because the other times when we obviously, like with our daughter, when we were pregnant, I didn't take a test. I never took them. Like a lot of people in that 2 week wait can't wait and they just take them. Right. But I just didn't. I don't know. I think I'd taken quite a few when we were trying naturally for the first 8 months at the very start. So I just thought it was a waste of time. And I think they advise you not to. And I just did what I told them. So this time, of course, there was no one involved. Like there was no medication involved. There was no people involved. So I just, like my husband was like, I think we should take one. I think, it's been a little bit late. So we took one. And that's why I have a photo of it, because it's the only one. And I sent it to my sister, who had kindly given us her eggs, and she was like, amazing, but wonderful, and everything crossed for you. And so, we were happy, and we kind of thought maybe this is meant to be. Like it seemed like it was, it really did. And we didn't get a midwife or anything. We just thought, no, we'll just wait, and so we just did. And then and of course we still had no idea whether it worked or not, but eventually I did get a little bit of spotting, and I felt that that was the beginning of my body telling us that that was that, which was really hard, but kind of not like wildly unexpected, I suppose, given our history. So I actually text my fertility doctor on her private phone that she had given us once, like if I had complications after an operation. And I just kept her number, and I thought, oh, if she doesn't want to, or if she thinks it's bad for me to be doing this, she'll let me know. So I just asked her, and she was actually on holiday somewhere with her family, but she messaged me back and she said, go into the clinic and they'll scan you and say, you know, just to confirm, which was so lovely, like to go there and have their support, even though it wasn't an IVF pregnancy and it was nothing to do with them. It was so lovely. And then they could tell that baby had stopped at about maybe 6.5 weeks or something.
Okay.
So it was just it was further than that when we found out, but we can never tell. And I remember thinking that it was so strange that it was, another miscarriage. I thought that the missed ones that we'd had all the other times might have been because of medication, but this time there was none. And so I was kind of like, so my body just really wanted these babies. It felt like it just wanted to hold on to them. That's why it didn't want
to let them go.
That's what it felt like. So, yeah, that was unusual, but obviously just something that my body does. It just holds on to them for as long as it can. So, yeah, then we just had to organise another DNC. So it's like number 4 or 5 or something. But, you know, it's just really the only way. And I definitely didn't want to go through that, like, the awful situation that happened the other time when it just happened by itself, because it was just so painful and scary and traumatic. So, I know that a lot of people have a lot of miscarriages like that, and I just didn't want that to happen if possible.
I'm sorry, gosh, so much loss,
Was and my husband definitely, like, I think we both found that one of the hardest ones, because we just started like to think that it was really an answer to prayer and that it was natural and we were relaxed and the first time we'd ever conceived naturally, you know, it seemed like a miracle, but
oh, I'm sorry.
So, we asked out my second cousin again, and she said she's really scared of injections and stuff, but she would do it for us. So her and her husband were so amazing. Like, and they didn't even live in Christchurch. They lived in Wellington, so it involved flights for her.
Yeah, right.
Blood tests and things that she hated, but we had that, and they had to do the counselling, of course, and we did it again and whatever, all the different process and red tape and things. And that was all just about set to go and to start her on her medications when we got a random call, like in February of 1 year, from the clinic. And I honestly thought they'd got the wrong people, saying that they'd found some embryos of ours and that stood out to them because the testing had been done on them. And they thought that the way the testing was done wasn't the way they did it now, or had something wrong with the way it was done. It was a bit hard to kind of understand, but they said that they had just gone ahead and defrosted them, quickly biopsied them in another place, refrozen them and retested them before they'd contacted us. And they said that they then thought that 3 that they previously thought were abnormal were now normal.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So they said, you might want to try those before you give your cousin
any donation.
And we were like, of course, yeah. So we were so excited. Like, we were really, really excited. We thought 3 normal ones is guaranteed. From that we would get one baby. Like, we probably thought, one baby, it'll just be one. But we still thought that's great. Like, that's what we want. Yeah. That's why I did that third round. And we were sure that way back in 2015 or whatever, they would have been thrown out. So we didn't think they existed anymore, but it was like they hoarded stuff or they didn't want to throw stuff out just in case. And then if ours hadn't have had testing done, they probably just would have been discarded when they'd done a clear out, but they stood out to them because of the testing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, then we were getting that, we were really like getting that one about to be transferred into you. And my husband, he said to me, knowing our luck, it'll be the third one we try that will work. It won't be this one. But it worked. The first one worked and it became son Josh.
Oh, amazing. Gosh.
And again,
after all of that trying.
We had bleeding again, and this time it was at 9-10 weeks. And so we again were like really scared. And I was anxious, like, way, like before I had movements, I was really, really anxious. And one time I saw a local midwife and I was just having a really anxious day and I was really teary. And like she, because she was a locum, like was obviously, I don't know, she was being cautious, but she was very concerned for me. But I don't think she realizes that when you've had that kind of a journey and so many miscarriages and things that you are going to be fearful and worried and emotional about it. And it doesn't mean you're neurotic and that you're going to, like, that you're insane or anything. Like, yeah, it's actually quite normal to have that response when you've had that kind of a journey. But she was very concerned for me and wanted me to see a counsellor and things. But anyway, the bleeding was at 19 weeks and it happened to be the day before our 19-week scan. So that was good because then we could actually just see the baby,
just get it,
you know.
Yeah.
And find out one way or another what was happening. And it was just because the placenta was low-lying. And so we found out that, and it wasn't like nothing, the baby was fine. Like, and we found out then that we were having a son, which, I mean, we were really excited, but we were still slightly like, oh God, like that bleeding, like we were still slightly worried that what if the placenta did, like, you know, give up or get detached or something like that. But anyway, it continued on and he was like born a big, big boy and he was fine. And
amazing.
It was amazing. So that was our family, but we knew that we still had those other two.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And we thought we're not getting any younger and we just thought that's so precious and that was so hard to get. And we thought, right, we're going to try another one. Mm-hmm. And so we did in January of 2021. And so Josh was only just a year old.
Okay.
So, yeah, with both, like with Lorelei, I weaned her off the breast at around a year so that I could do the fourth round of IVF. And with Josh, I weaned him off so I could start taking the medication to prepare for another transfer. And they put their embryo in and that one worked as well. And we got our second miracle son, Noah.
How amazing. It's crazy, yay. Like after all that.
I know.
You've now got three beautiful children in your arms. It's like, wow.
Yeah, it really felt like it was meant to be and like it felt like it was in God's plan kind of, it wasn't going to be a straightforward or easy journey and that if you had given up sooner you wouldn't have got there, but it just felt like it was meant to be.
Yeah, how amazing. So do you still have one on ice or is that one?
We do. Yeah, we do. And it is like a big question like that we have that is that is still playing on my mind and that after we had Noah, I couldn't stop thinking about that last baby because essentially to me it's a baby. I have photos of all our children as embryos and I go back and look at those photos of them as embryos and it's amazing. And so to us, like it's not an embryo, it's a baby really waiting there. And I don't know what to do exactly. We're very torn. Like, essentially, we kind of want to, but we don't know if it's it's probably not a sensible decision, but our hearts want to. So,
So
we don't know what to do.
That's the next story to come, whether that happens or not.
So, after we had transferred the other embryo after our first son that we had left at the clinic that was tested normal, we of course waited like to at least 12 weeks before, like we told most people. And this included my little daughter who was 4 at the time. And then we had some extended family coming down for a holiday to the South Island from the North Island and we wanted to tell them, or we thought we would. But Jared was like, Lorelei needs to know first. She's the most important. She needs to know first. So I thought, right, I'll tell her. So I'd just given her a bath and I told her. And she was so sweet. She said, "Congratulations, Mummy. I'm so happy for you," and hugged me.
Oh,
it was the sweetest, like, very grown up. It's so sweet.
in the way sweetheart.
She couldn't say congratulations.
Yeah, yeah.
She did it the best way she could, and just like, yeah, I don't know. It seemed like just that she doesn't know really the journey, but it seemed like she was just so genuinely happy
yeah.
for me, which yeah. just was so amazing. So that's a lovely oh, memory.
That is lovely, little sweetheart. Felicity, I'm just so happy for you that you've got your babies, but boy, what a toll it must have taken on you to all that trying, all those miscarriages, all that heartache. It's a lot, right?
All the surgery and things. And yeah, when I look back, like I can realise like how like the physical stress was taking yes. an impact on my body, like even like after maybe the first or second round, like it definitely affects you physically and emotionally and mentally. It's all consuming. It isn't really healthy for you, but I'm so yeah. so glad that I did it.
Yeah, of course.
But my sister Lucy did help me through so much. Like every surgery and things, like you'd be lying there and you'd be scared before they put you under and things. But you know, she just gave me like I could just hear her saying, "Don't give up." Like I knew she wouldn't have, and I knew she would have. But if she was, you know, still with us, she would have said, "Do not." And I felt like she was saying that even to me still, like, because I felt like she was watching us and knew.
Yeah.
So she inspired me so much because she was such a determined person and in her 29 years had lived such a lot of life already. And,
right.
you know, she was in London and ultra successful and just she seized opportunities when they came and lived her life to the fullest. It was as if she knew that her life wasn't going to be long. Of course she didn't, but she lived life and she was determined and made her dreams come true. And so I just used her as a real inspiration.
Right.
And a strength. And so often like I'd be upset before like a procedure or an operation or something. And like our fertility doctor knew all about Lucy. And so she knew I was crying because of that and like of memories of the horrible pain that she had to go through and different things, like as opposed to like for myself, she knew that, but like other people in the theatre wouldn't have known that. But
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for sharing with us about Lucy as well. Such an important part of you and your life and your journey.
I know. And like we tell our children, I mean, Josh doesn't really understand much because he's so little, but he says Auntie Lucy and he knows that he loves him. And Lorelai is like, I wish Auntie Lucy was here. I said, I know, honey. Yeah. She would have loved you and she would have done so much fun stuff with you. And
Okay, hun, we're going to finish off the podcast with three last questions, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. The first one is, what did you learn about yourself?
Well, I definitely learned, like, my strength, like, more than I would have thought, and just, my determination and our family stubbornness. definitely. My husband would definitely agree with that. I think I pushed him along on the ride, you know, and made the things that he wouldn't have necessarily considered, like the donation. I would have absolutely been happy with that if that had been the route that was meant for us. I would have loved that baby just as much as it was mine. So I honestly wasn't, at that point, I was quite happy with that idea. I was more than happy with it if it had that. And I learned how strong our relationship was.
Amazing.
To get through it, even though it wasn't easy. And I think men and women do cope so differently with it. And I'm sure he just wanted me to shut up a lot of the time. But for me, talking about it helped me. So, even when he didn't want to, he listened to me. And I really needed his support. I really wish that I had have had a support group at the time of people going through a similar journey. I think that it's amazing now that there's just so much more awareness and those kind of groups. And
that would have really helped. That is awesome, eh? So following on from that, any advice you would give to someone who might be facing a similar journey to you?
Yes, I mean, I hope that our story can give people who are going through this some hope that things are possible, and resilience to keep going. But I also would say that you have to do what's right for you and follow your own heart and your own gut instinct, because what's best for you is so individual, and sometimes you just have a moment of clarity and you realize that, you know, maybe you can't continue. I know of two couples personally who one had a really long journey and then chose eventually to stop, and another one had a shorter one but still did treatment. And they both wrote beautiful statements about stopping and being happy with their life as it was and ending that chapter. And I actually think that it's just as brave a decision as to continue.
So do I.
Yeah.
100%.
Like, I so admired them and respected them.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly with that. Everyone's journey, you just have to do what's right for you. And there's no right way to go about this or to how long to try for any of that. Eh? It's just what's right for you, what feels okay. Yeah.
I definitely think that. And also because of the nature of the whole thing, like, we did get there in the end, but it's not a guarantee for anybody, for us.
That's right.
Anybody.
Yep, so, you could have kept going for that long and ended up in a very different place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's why it's personal. And if you take some time to really think what's right for you and your family and husband or partner, and then decide from there. But in a way, like, I think it is almost braver or equally brave.
Totally.
To admit and to decide and to make that choice and to still embrace life and for all the wonderful other things that you have in life.
That's right. Great
it's
advice.
About gratitude and things. So, but I definitely, I've helped three other couples, not those two, but three other ones who came to me because they knew I'd been through it, and helped them, told them what to expect and helped them through hard bits and losses and things. And that was really, I was really glad I was able to make that easier for them and prepare them for what it's really like and what's to come. Yeah. And all three of those couples got there in the end and got their baby. So I was really happy that they could come to me when they were upset and ask me about it, and I could share stuff and make them feel less alone, really.
That's really important. Okay, thank you. And our final question today, Felicity, is what does it mean to you to be Lorelei, Joshua and Noah's mum?
It's a dream come true. It's a lifelong dream from when I feed my little doll, when my mum had my second sister, and she would ask me what I was doing, and I was feeding Amy pureed vegetables with under two. So it is something I've always wanted, and something you take for granted will be easy, but it's not always.
That's right.
And I also feel like it's a big responsibility, and I do not feel that I am always an amazing parent, but I know how much I love them and they know how much they are loved, and I'm just doing my best. But again, there's that whole thing of when you've had such a journey to get them, you feel like you should always be happy and grateful and things, but parenting is hard, and you can't always be 100% happy and grateful. It's just not.
Yeah. Realistic. Agree completely.
But they are, honestly, they're my greatest accomplishment, and they're my legacy, and I think they're my sister's legacy as well.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
Lucy was, she was about 2 months from her wedding. It was all planned out, and, her poor fiancé, they would have had children. They definitely would have, and my children would have had more cousins, and so would my niece, and they're for her as well, and they're part of her. They'll have parts of her in them, and So they're just the biggest challenge, but the biggest reward. And and now all that stuff that we went through was so worth it, and not as hard now that it's done, I guess. Doable again in a heartbeat.
Right. Yeah, well, there you go. Oh, thank you so, so much for sharing with such honesty and openness and letting us inside your family for a little bit. I really, really appreciate it. So thank you.
I really hope that it inspires and helps some people. And, I just think that all children are such miracles, and there's amazing, like, doctors and nurses and specialists and things, and you've just got to be kind to yourself and just do your best.
Yeah, and I'm sure that this will help someone for sure. I mean, this is why I do it. So just having your story out there would definitely help someone. So thank you again for sharing.
Thank you. You're amazing in the work that you're doing, and I think you're a beautiful interviewer.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. A huge thank you again to you, Felicity. Having you open up and share your story like this is so wonderful and so important. I'm so glad you have your babies in your arms and your beautiful sister in your heart. As always, I hope this podcast brings you hope, healing, and hugs. This is the end of season 3 of the podcast, and I'm going to be taking a little break, a little season break, and then prepping for the next season. If you are keen to share your story of infertility or baby loss for the next season, please be in touch. You can DM me on the podcast Instagram page, or you can send me an email. I will put those details in the show notes so that you know how to contact me. Thanks so much. I'd love to hear your story.